Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
And I'm Treyvell Anderson.
Yes, Treyvell's our co-host for this week. You might know them as host of Cricket's What a Day, or maybe you know them as an award-winning journalist and authoress. Their latest book, We See Each Other, A Black Trans Journey Through TV and Film, is a great read for those who want to prolong Pride Month for as long as possible. I know, because I have my copy. Treyvell, thanks for doing the show. The Strawberry Moon kicked off the official start of summer. What's the thing you're looking forward to?
Thanks for having me. I know nothing about the Strawberry Moon, but what I will say is a few years ago, I took my very first, like, adult vacation, which I consider to be, like, a all-expenses-paid resort situation. And that is now the thing I look forward to every summer, is just going somewhere, already having paid for everything and just, you know, taking all the drinks, all the food, and doing nothing. So that's what I'm
living your best life. Living your best life.
You got it. There you go.
This week on Hysteria, Treyvell Anderson joins as co-host, and we talk about the second anniversary of Roe falling. Then, Hysteria's associate producer, Fiona Pistana, joins to talk about the state of trans legislation across the country. Then we get joyful with a lot of Sani and Sani Petty this week. Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast that's commemorating the fall of Roe by self-medicating ourselves with champagne and hate-watching the debates. Speaking of, the rematch no one wanted airs tonight, Thursday. We obviously have not watched the debate yet, but we have news-witch predictions and thoughts nonetheless. CNN's Jake Tapper and Dana Bash will host and moderate Donald Trump and Joe Biden's unusually early debate. Ground rules have already been laid out. There'll be no studio audience, which is a major change from past debates. Candidates are not allowed props or any pre-written notes. They'll be armed only with pen, paper, and water, Treyvell. But best of all, mics will be muted when candidates aren't speaking, so Trump's chances of interrupting are less. Treyvell, how do you feel going into the debate?
You know, I'm really just interested in getting it over with. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, I feel like we've known that they're going to go head-to-head for a little moment at this point. Let's throw them in the gauntlet and see who comes out on the other side. What about you?
Honestly, I'm going to be watching it like I watch any horror movie, like sort of through my fingers, you know?
Like, probably for the best.
I'm so nervous because, in my opinion, it's either going to be catastrophic for someone or net neutral. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I don't think, because we do know both of the candidates, I don't think anyone's going to blow our minds with some, like, gangbuster performance.
Right. Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. We kind of know what to expect in a way.
Right. Because also we've seen them both debate, not just before, but each other.
That too.
America is so boring. Where will you be watching?
So I am actually in Aspen right now at the Aspen Ideas Festival. So I'll be joining some other, you know, nerdy people and watching it.
I got to tell you something. That sounds like the way to do it. I am watching with my friend Allie Wentworth tomorrow because we decided we both needed an emotional support pet, and so we're going to be each other's emotional support pets. So here's the funny thing. Do you think it's weird Donald Trump wants President Biden to take a drug test? He's been talking about this nonstop. When, during the last debate in 2020, according to Mark Meadows' book, Trump had tested positive for COVID and just, like, did the debate and didn't tell anybody. Does the hypocrisy know no bounds?
Listen, they both need to take a test. How about that, okay? Because I've been saying they're both going to need a B12 shot or something to get up there. You know what I mean? Because, listen, we're dealing with both people who probably shouldn't be president, if we're being quite honest.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have 100% been like, there's got to be a B12 shot involved. Like, I've gone back to the days of, like, Jackie and JFK when they talked about how in order to get through a lot of events, they would do these, like, cocktails that were essentially, I think, B12 shots. So it's like, I hope they take one.
They got something going, okay? 5-hour energy drink, Red Bull, something.
Something. I mean, I do think it's pretty interesting. How do you think the mic muting is going to go?
This is my favorite part, okay?
Tell
because
me.
we know that Trump in particular likes interrupting. That's how he kind of, you know, shows off in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
This time with CNN being able to mute the mics, in theory, that means we'll get a little structure,
a little
comportment in public, hopefully. But you know, afterwards, he's just going to, you know, assail against them anyway.
I know.
So I can also see him trying to, like, force them to mute him as well.
Do you think that because they've muted Trump, he'll, of course, seem less insane than last time? I mean, if we think back to 2016, he was, like, stalking Hillary Clinton from behind, right? So it's like his tactics are always very sort of production focused. You know, like, like, how am I going to, like, how am I going to make this whole physical setting work for me? But, like, are we going to be forced to listen on Friday morning to people be like, that was the night Donald Trump became president because he didn't physically harass someone on stage?
Oh, I hate that. I hope that people don't spin it that way.
Right.
You know, just because we don't see him showing out does not mean he's somehow presidential. You know what I mean? Because he's shown us time and time again that he's not.
Right. Okay, so you've heard it here first. Troy Bell and I are both like, don't you dare try to spin shit if he basically, let's not try to call Donald Trump presidential if he simply resists the urge to physically assault someone on stage.
Right. Yeah. Least we can do.
The least we can do. Okay, Troy Bell, this week also marks the second anniversary of Roe being overturned by SCOTUS. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
And Democrats are using the opportunity to remind the American people that Donald Trump and Republicans are solely to blame. They're also trying to fundraise. And while Donald Trump, I know you've gotten the emails, and while Donald Trump has been out on the campaign trail bragging about overturning Roe, Biden and Democrats are mobilizing their efforts to spread the word across the country through advertising, campaign events, and news conferences. And while abortion at this moment is banned in 14 states with limited exceptions, it's also important to remind our listeners that abortion rights have won in every single election since SCOTUS overturned Roe. So we need to keep fighting. We may be tired, but we cannot be broken. So,
yes.
Trevelle, since Roe was overturned, has the anti-abortion movement succeeded in stopping abortions?
I mean, I've been saying it's kind of like a tale of two worlds, right? Because you have on the state legislature front, right, these, you know, bans that are being passed by these Republican-controlled state legislatures. And then, like you just mentioned, every single time abortion has made it to the ballot, voters have voted to, you know, enshrine those rights in their state's constitutions. And so it's like, have they been successful? But then you also look at the numbers, right, of abortions that are happening, and they've actually gone up, you know?
Funny. It feels like the only thing they've succeeded in doing is making abortions harder, more expensive, more time-consuming, and more dangerous.
Which puts greater pressure, right, on folks who are already, you know, navigating the peculiar situation, right, of needing and navigating an abortion. It really is kind of wild when you look at it that way.
It's really a bummer.
Yeah. It is. But shout out to the voters, right? Showing up every single time and, like, letting these people know that we're not just gonna sit here, right, while y'all turn the clock back a few years.
So,
a few decades.
Decades. 73. Can you believe it? I wasn't even born yet. That's crazy. All right, so let's do a quick roundup and talk about where abortion is on the ballot in November to help motivate our listeners and keep them informed.
Yes.
And they can turn their anxiety into action. Okay, I'll start with Arizona. Arizona, they're out there collecting signatures. Organizers with Arizona for Abortion Access are actively collecting signatures to qualify a constitutional amendment for the November ballot. They've already collected over 500,000 so far, which is more than the 400,000 they needed by July 3rd. The amendment establishes a fundamental right to abortion and prevents the state from limiting access to abortion or penalizing anyone who assists another person in accessing abortion.
Then over in Arkansas, they are also collecting signatures. Organizers there are collecting signatures for the Arkansas Right to Abortion Initiative, which would allow abortion up to 18 weeks and create exceptions to Arkansas's abortion ban for rape, incest, fatal fetal abnormalities, and to preserve the health or life of the mother or parent. The campaign must submit more than 90,000 valid signatures by July 5th in order to qualify for the general election. So, you know, they've got about a week or so to go.
Got a week or so to go. I have faith. Florida. Florida has qualified for the ballot. Organizers with Floridians Protecting Freedom collected more than 1 million signatures for voters to put Amendment 4 on the ballot in November. Florida is currently under a 6-week abortion ban with a mandatory 24-hour waiting period. The amendment would overturn the ban and protect access to abortion up to fetal viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's doctor. Florida has a supermajority requirement for ballot measures, and so the amendment must pass by 60% of voters. Yikes.
I believe
okay. a lot of the ballot initiatives that have been passed to date have gotten pretty close to that in states like Kansas Absolutely. And Ohio. So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Over in Montana, they have submitted their signatures. Montanans Securing Reproductive Rights said in a Friday press conference that it had collected more than 117 signatures since early April. That's about 57,000 more than necessary. They only needed 60,000 or so. The constitutional amendment there would secure Montanans the right to make their own decisions about pregnancy, including decisions about abortion.
And over in Nevada, they've submitted signatures. Organizers with Nevadans for Reproductive Freedom submitted more than 200,000 signatures on May 20th to qualify the Nevada Right to Productive Freedom Act, which would codify the right to abortion in the state constitution up to fetal viability. The signatures must now be verified by county officials in order to appear for the ballot. So other states that have qualified for the ballot, Colorado, Maryland, South Dakota, and we're still waiting to hear about Missouri, Nebraska, and New York. New York actually also has the Equal Rights Amendment on the ballot come November, which is, in my opinion, the way that we really need to codify Roe. Let's just say we all have equal rights. That seems like a very good
and simple
way. So I don't know why we're taking so long on that one, but Kirsten Gillibrand's leading the fight on that. So we're glad to see it. And as a New Yorker, I shall be voting for that in November. Now, as SCOTUS closes out its term this month, oh boy, I woke up, everyone knows we record on a Wednesday. I woke up early to see if SCOTUS was going to drop some decisions on us today. But we are still waiting on the court to make a decision on the EMTALA case, which, as described by the ACLU, will determine whether politicians can put doctors in jail for treating pregnant patients experiencing medical emergencies. This is very scary. It's a very major decision, all intertwined with what they did to Roe 2 years ago. So we'll see how they decide. Fingers crossed, it'll probably be in the next couple of days. In the meantime, go to VoteSaveAmerica.com to take action regarding our country's highest court. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, our producer Fiona will join us for a very special Pride-focused conversation.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no-bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
stupid.
It doesn't
sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Hysteria. We've got more news for you. On the topic of the court rulings, SCOTUS announced this week that next term they'll decide whether or not Tennessee's gender-affirming care ban for trans kids is constitutional. Whatever they decide will affect any state with trans bans, and the estimated 100,000 trans minors in America will be impacted by them. Travel, question. Do you think it is a good sign or a bad sign that they've decided to take up this case?
I am resisting the urge to be very apocalyptic here, okay?
Okay. I have to be honest. I felt a little bit like maybe they're like, okay, this has gone too far.
I mean, listen, these people on this Supreme Court have disappointed me time and time again
over
these last few years. And so I am nervous and cautious, but mm-hmm. I'm holding out hope that, you know, something, you know, will shake them into doing the right thing here.
I'm with you. I mean, it's like, if they're going to decide that bump stocks are basically people, can they also just make trans kids people too?
Listen, we can only hope.
Now, to close out Pride Month, let's check in on the status of trans legislation in the U.S. Listeners, you may remember our guest from Pride 2023. They researched the history of anti-trans bills in America, breaking down how we got to this point of intense conservative backlash. They're here to continue and update that conversation for 2024. Please welcome Hysteria's associate producer, Fiona Pastana.
Hey, what's up, you guys?
Thanks
for having me.
Thank you for joining. It would not have been a proper tribute to Pride Month if we did not actually dig deep in here on what's actually happening across the country. So, Fee, what's been going on since you were last on the pod a year ago?
Yeah, so in short, there have been a lot more anti-trans bills that have been proposed. You know, only a fraction of them end up getting passed, thankfully. But, you know, the efforts from the right are really incessant. So in 2023, the number of anti-trans bills that happened in the states more than tripled from the year prior. So there were about somewhere between 500 and 600 anti-trans bills that were proposed throughout 2023. Now, in 2024, note that we are only halfway through the year.
Yeah.
We are already at the number of bills that were proposed last year. We're already around the 600 mark in 2024. And that's only going to get worse as the year goes on. Who knows? It might end up being double from last year. We keep breaking records in the worst ways possible. What's happening is pretty consistent. They're still focusing mostly on education and healthcare. They're still mostly focusing on trans youth, although there are even more bills that are impacting trans adults as well. We can get more into specifics later, but like places like Florida are quite dangerous for trans people to be existing. Just like being a trans person with an ID is a problem. don't get pulled over in Florida. But yeah, most of them are impacting trans youth. In general, there's just more stuff. There's also more stuff happening on a federal level, more federal legislation, not as much just on the state level. It's all framed as like, you know, protecting women, protecting children, protecting parents' rights and all those
protecting them from what?
From the left-wing commie gay agenda.
It's
genuinely.
Fee, have you noticed sort of when you say healthcare bills, what exactly are they, what is the common thing that they're normally addressing? What are they going after?
They're going after gender-affirming care for especially trans youth. So, like top surgeries, for example, or giving people hormones. But the people who are proposing bills like this really don't understand how the process works, or like the how safe and normal a lot of these procedures are, and also how uncommon it is for trans youth to honestly be having like major surgeries or whatever. There are a lot of hoops to jump through before, you know, you end up having care like this, the fear-mongering from the right of like, oh, they're just chopping up people's bodies willy-nilly is completely inaccurate. You need to get a therapist's letter. You need to like show that this is something that you genuinely need and want. There's also usually like a waiting list. Like, it's not as fast and loose as it seems to be characterized as by these right-wing people and by the language of these bills.
It feels to me so much, Fee, like the same sort of cynical, bad faith arguments that the anti-abortion people make around abortion. They're like, no, we have to have all these regulations because we can't have babies being executed in the ninth month because so many, and that's the really cynical thing because it's this assumption or the implication or the inference that somehow people who are pregnant are waking up in the ninth month and being like, oh God, I don't think so. I'm just going to like go like it is so, so fucking deeply cynical. And for trans youth, so much of it, if I understand, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of this revolves just around like puberty blockers in a lot of cases, which are totally safe and fine.
Yeah, extremely
normal. Non-trans children, right?
Right.
Prescribed puberty blockers every day, you know? But it's being painted. I think the important part of what you just noted is, right, the conservative right, the Republicans, they go to extremes, right? And so they say all of these trans kids are undergoing surgeries. And the reality is, actually, that type of medical intervention is the, like, very last thing
right.
that a trans youth can access. They must first go through, as Fee mentioned, all these other steps, such as puberty blockers, such as, you know, other forms of affirming care before we even get there, right? But they are exploiting people's ignorance, right, around gender, around healthcare, around what we need as trans people to move through the world. And I think that's what's giving them a lot of this kind of energy, you know, is because people just don't know. And so, yeah, it sounds like it would be plausible that you would be doing bottom surgery on a 15-year-old, but it's actually not happening. It don't work like that, people.
Right. Yeah. It's adjacent or it's tethered to the argument that all of the crazy online, I see it all over TikTok, that somehow there is an assumption that everyone is so concerned, especially in Florida, about trans athletes in high school and how, people shouldn't be able to play. Okay, the assumption there is that someone would actually transition so that they could play on a sport and win.
Like,
just so
insane.
They can get a medal, okay,
what?
In a swim meet, okay?
like you hear this and you wonder how, like, logical people can say, oh, is that a thing? Is that happening? It's not happening.
It's first of all, yeah, the advantages aren't really there. That the argument totally does not make sense. And it's wild that it's not only being pushed by like conservative cis people, but also being pushed by conservative trans people. Like I was taking a glance at Blair White's Instagram. If you don't know, Blair White is a trans girl who is very buddy-buddy with the likes of Joe Rogan and Alex Jones, and she is just a very interesting character. She recently went on Piers Morgan and was talking about how, like, she doesn't think that trans girls should be playing on women's sports teams. She doesn't think that trans girls should be using women's bathrooms. And she's like, you should trust me. I'm an authority on this because I'm trans myself and I think this way. And I'm like, no, unfortunately, I think you just want the conservative money and attention that you get from being like quirky and different and not like other trans people, you know, like I'm not a crazy woke person
being
like
the
all
token.
Those fools.
Right.
No,
yeah, exactly.
It reminds me of, and I believe one of them passed away and rest in peace, Silk and Diamond, you know, the Trump supporters, the two black women. I mean, look, they never would have gotten the fame and notoriety had they not been two outspoken black women saying they were supporting Trump, right?
Literally.
It's like everyone needs to take everything with a grain of salt. Trevelt, tell me, what have you been noticing about the fight for trans rights and the American trans experience over the past year?
Yeah, what's so really interesting, as Fee just noted, is that, like, sociopolitically, like, if you're looking at what's happening in state legislatures, it's, like, a shit show for us mm-hmm. as a community. But then if you look, like, at, you know, just our representation as trans people in culture, it's actually quite different. It's the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. We are enjoying so much visibility, right? Magazine covers, folks are acting all over the place. You know, trans people seem to be, you know, a little bit more respected, if you will, if you were to look at our cultural productions. But that visibility that we've gained, particularly over the last decade, I talk a little bit about this in my book, that visibility has been like a paradox, because as we've become more visible in culture, right, we've also become more vulnerable mm-hmm. to the types of violence that Fee just, you know, listed that we're seeing spread throughout state legislatures. And so I think as a trans person, it's really kind of wild to be existing in this moment where mm-hmm. you can go to, I don't know, some store and get a shirt that says Trans Lives Matter and then also have to show up at a protest because they don't want you to be able to play sports or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's all before you turn 18. So it's really wild.
Unfortunately, like, the more, especially like economic power that trans people yeah. are gaining, conservatives just want to clout chase and stay yep. relevant. Like, they're always culturally behind, and they just like love to latch on to these things that so that they can stay a part of the conversation, yep. even if they don't actually care that much. Like, honestly, I don't think most people give a fuck about what trans people are doing. They just like are biting the headlines so that they'll get some sort of attention as they're like clamoring for votes or social relevance or whatever.
Fee, let's take listeners into some practical information that they can use and how they can mm-hmm. help. So mm-hmm. what states should people be paying attention to? Where are yeah. some of the most egregious examples of right-wing fear of the LGBTQIA plus community?
Yeah, totally. So I mentioned Florida earlier. That's definitely like a major example. There are some great resources that I have been leaning on for getting information about this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Specifically, right now, I'm going to be talking about stuff that I've gathered from Aaron in the Morning. Aaron Reed is an amazing trans journalist who keeps a track of all of these bills. Another resource that I use throughout this is the Trans Legislation Tracker. So mm-hmm. if you guys are interested in learning more and seeing more specifics, definitely recommend going there.
And Fee, we'll actually link in show notes.
Yes, absolutely. That's my job. I will definitely put it there. So Erin Reed has a map that she continually updates. I believe it's every month with what's going on in these states. She tends to have two maps, one for things impacting trans adults and one for things impacting trans youth. So the Deep South, as you could expect, is mm-hmm. definitely the place where it's the most dangerous to be a trans person. The only state that she notes as like a do not travel mm-hmm. place is Florida.
Yeah.
But apart from that, right now, Oklahoma is pretty active. They have 60 anti-trans bills currently under consideration. And then on the federal level, they have about as many, 60 or 61 bills that people are focusing on. But focusing more on the states, that those are just the highest numbers. Tennessee is another rough spot. Mm-hmm. Tennessee is really interesting because they are taking their anti-trans legislation to start impacting just queer relationships mm-hmm. in general now. Like, they want to define marriage as between a man and a woman, which is just so
not this again.
Backwards. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, like, this was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Like, we already took care of this. I don't understand why we're moving backwards. But basically, like, it says a female must be the bride and a male must be the groom, which is very boring and also dangerous. Other states that we should be paying attention to, really tough bathroom laws and legal recognition stuff coming out of Mississippi and Alabama. Mm-hmm. New Hampshire is a really interesting place to be focusing on. Yeah. It, like, generally speaking, the Northeast is pretty blue and pretty safe, and they have, like, protections going on in those places. But New Hampshire has a lot of red, purple happening throughout their state. They're very wacky, and a lot of this stuff goes under the radar because they are surrounded by mostly other blue areas. But they have been legalizing bathroom bans and that sort of thing in private places. South Carolina is also another tough place. So yeah, in general, the Deep South is struggling a bit. I do want to take note of some hope that I have been seeing, though. Mm-hmm. We'll get more into actions that we can take later to be helping these places, but a little piece of hope comes in Georgia. Mm-hmm. They blocked 20 anti-trans bills in this year's legislative session, and they have a Republican majority. So I think the fact that that sort of progress can be made in a place that does struggle so much with the purple, like, push and pull, it shows that, like, these things are unpopular and people don't care about them as much as the influx of them might be showing, which gives me faith that even in the worst of places, even in places where it can be very restrictive, things will be blocked and progress can be made. Another place where I see a lot of hope is in Arizona. Their governor blocks a lot of anti-trans legislation, which is amazing. Katie Hobbs is a rock star. Yeah.
Can you guys imagine, just imagine, if the amount of effort that they put into these stupid fucking bills that should go absolutely nowhere and help absolutely no one, if instead they put it into maternal health, if they put it into education, the states that you're talking about, Fee, not thriving in reading levels and such, you know, like it's like, you know, let's get everybody broadband, you know, like let's make sure people can connect and work from home. Instead, they all just sit around doing abso-fucking-lutely nothing that is helping their communities. And speaking of, we the past couple of weeks on the show have been talking about Trump's Project 2025, which is really disturbing. As we have talked about, it's totally anti-abortion. They want to disband the Department of Education. They'll disband the EPA. Like, it is the most destructive. They want to get rid of the career employees in the federal government, the people who literally make the government function, who ensure a peaceful transition of power between administrations. But that's not all they're doing. So, Fee and Treyvel, can you talk about, you know, sort of the tenets of Project 2025 if Trump won that would directly impact trans rights?
Totally. Yeah. I'll go first. I just want to flag that, Alyssa, something that you mentioned earlier was like a lot of the language around these things really reflects the anti-abortion movement on the right as well. That sort of stuff is all coming from, you know, Republican think tanks and political thought leaders who are like people from the Heritage Foundation, for example, and people who are creating Project 2025. They all reference the same blueprints. They're referencing the anti-abortion movement, the anti-gay movement, and they're just borrowing that language and freshening it up to, again, stay culturally relevant and attack the new mole that is coming up from the left. So specifically in Project 2025, Trump has been very open about the anti-trans, just policies and actions that he's going to take when he gets into office. He recently had a speech in Wisconsin where he talked about he's going to shut down federal funding for schools that support trans people. He also really cares a lot about trans people in sports and preventing that from happening. He also put out a campaign video, I believe it was last year, outlining more proposals about this. He wants to terminate Medicare and Medicaid funding for hospitals that provide a gender-affirming care. He wants to charge teachers with sex discrimination if they validate a trans kid's name, pronouns, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Want to order the federal government from funding trans people at all, or even just like involving them in things, supporting them in any way, shape, or form, whether that's monetary or just like giving them a place to exist somewhere in the government.
Yeah.
He wants to get rid of all of that turn our country back into a very cis straight, and not that it's not this already, but very cis straight conservative Christian place through everything in Project 2025.
Yeah, and something I want to double tap that you mentioned is that, right, all of these movements are actually connected. Another resource for folks is this podcast called The Anti-Trans Hate Machine by Amara Jones, in which she connects, right, how the anti-abortion movement is connected to this anti-trans movement, which is connected to the, you know, anti-global warming movement, which is connected, you know, all of this stuff is connected. And like you say, Fee, they really are just copying and pasting, right, what has been put forth in generations before now, right, in trying to revive that. And so in so many ways, we do have a script on how to resist, because, you know, communities and generations before us have resisted. And so I think even as we articulate what is a really dire and urgent situation, right, we can also take some instruction and possibility from the generations that came before us to help us articulate, right, how we move forward in spite of whatever happens with the presidential election.
Totally. Yeah. The one perk of history repeating itself. And yeah, I want to also double tap what you were saying about Amara Jones and all her work. She's amazing. And Trans Lash is really great if you want any resources about trans media and stuff.
So here's a question that I'm deeply interested in. Have y'all found any unlikely allies out there? Like people who are becoming part of the fight that you never would have expected?
I mean, I think generally speaking, more and more like cis people feel empowered to be fighting against these things. Like, I love seeing the parents of trans kids who maybe initially after their kids came out, they were like, I don't really know what this means. Like, this definitely contradicts things that I was raised with, but like, I'm leading with love and I just want to love my kid. I feel like a lot of parents who then, you know, learn things and work with their kids and like just understand them more on a personal level, they end up being some of the best allies. Like, I love seeing at Pride, like, moms offering hugs to everybody. Those allies have so much sway because, like, of course, trans people are going to fight for ourselves. Like, that's a guaranteed thing. But cis allies have so much sway, especially when they're talking to other cis people who don't know trans people at all. Having that context and that power, frankly, is really helpful.
I have to tell you, I have seen some church groups down south protecting Pride events, and that gave me joy.
That's great.
I was like, thank you.
You'll be surprised, okay, who is actually out here, right, standing up for what is right. And I always say that we need more people too, right? Because just numerically, we as trans people, we're not going to be able to do it by ourselves. You know, we just don't have the numbers, unfortunately. And so we need those unlikely allies. We need those parents, right? We need, I always say, we need white women, okay?
I'm here.
Come on, white women. All right. We need you all to realize, right, that all of the fights are connected, right? They're coming for your bodily autonomy in the same ways that they're coming for trans people's bodily autonomy, right? In the same ways that we see, you know, white supremacist values get, you know, ballooned into these prevailing sentiments. Like, we're all fighting against all of these systems together. And once we realize that, right, then hopefully folks will, you know, not just vote and act in their best interests, but also in the best interest of those other communities, such as trans people, Black trans and brown trans people, more specifically, with us in mind, not just with yourselves in mind.
Yeah. Every struggle interconnected, for sure.
You guys, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time. Fiona, we're going to link a lot of resources for folks to learn Definitely. How they can be better allies. And to everyone listening, we know you may be unenthusiastic about this election, but we hope this helps clarify why participation is still so vital. We're going to take a quick break. We get back, Sani Petty.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
stupid.
It doesn't
sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
stupid.
It doesn't
sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast for the real ones who know that Pride Month is every month if you live your life right. Before we get into our Sani Petties, some announcements for the class. What's that I hear? Is it democracy calling? That's right, Hysteria heads. Crooked is hosting a subscriber live chat during the first presidential debate tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, exclusively on our Friends of the Pod Discord. Join a community of Crooked fans and a few staff surprises to live chat about the showdown between disgraced former President Trump and current President Biden. If that sounds like your ideal night, then first of all, you need to get out more. But second of all, you need to head to crooked.com/friends to learn more and sign up. Friends of the Pod subscribers get you access to a bunch of great content, pre-sale codes, merch discounts, and ad-free Pod Save America, if you're into that sort of thing. I was on our daily news podcast to talk all about what goes into the debate prep process and what to expect for the night. And if you want to get a recap of the debate, What a Day will also be releasing a post-debate episode the morning after. To listen, head to What a Day feed now and make sure to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Okay, announcements are done. Let's get to Sani Petty. Travel, Fee, are you Sani or are you Petty?
I am Sani, okay?
All right, get into it.
I, listen, We just spoke about a whole lot of anti-trans legislation. The thing keeping me sane, it's two things. One, like I mentioned before, knowing that Black trans folks have come before me and lived and loved and thrived in times arguably worse than these. So that's really affirming, knowing that I can do it as well. And the second thing is the creative contributions of Black trans folks, particularly in the music space. It keeps me going. It keeps me, you know, my foot grounded to the ground. And so I've got a recommendation for your listeners. It's an album by a fabulous artist who happens to be a Black trans woman, Never Ending Nina. The album is called Present. My favorite song is called Soul. Hopefully we can put that in the show notes as well so that y'all can, you know, add it to your last bit of your Pride playlist, okay? Add it to your July playlist too, okay?
Awesome.
Pride is forever.
I love that.
If you live your life
forever.
Right. Literally.
Okay.
Every day.
Fee, are you sani or petty?
I'm also sane.
Yay!
Which I am loving this positive energy. What's keeping me sane is clean air. And that might sound really boring.
No.
But hear me out. Okay. Unfortunately, the sad reality is that COVID has not gone away. Mm. She persists and she definitely, you know, comes back around, especially when summer is out and popping. People are gathering together, crowding some spaces and, you know, sharing intimate air. I, outside of work and stuff, do a lot of, I love the music scene. I love throwing shows. I love like gathering people together and having like just DIY spaces for small artists to perform and be together and cultivate like a sweet DIY community. One thing about concerts, though, is that it can get very packed, whether it's on a small like house show level or whether it's, you know, at an arena or in like a mid-sized venue, something like the Wiltern in LA, if you know that sort of space. But what gives me a lot of hope is that while those places can be, you know, sometimes they can be characterized as super spreaders, like what was going on with Taylor Swift in Europe. There were thousands of people in her crowds getting COVID from her shows, which is a crazy thought. It can be that intense, but it can also be, you know, on a smaller scale, just like cases popping up in the crowd just because people are kind of squished. But there are people actively working to make these spaces safer and more accessible for people who have disabilities or have long COVID, which is an increasing problem that is going to continue over the years as the virus persists. There are organizations called Clean Air Clubs that are providing shows and spaces with air purifiers. There are also mask blocks basically in every city. If you just look up mask block and the place that you live, chances are you'll find something. And if those clean air orgs or mask blocks don't exist already, you can definitely start one your own. Mask blocks specifically provide masks for free for people who are coming to these crowded places. And, you know, masks and air purifiers really make these places a lot more accessible and safer and just makes, you know, it's such a bummer if you go to a fun event and end up getting sick after.
Right.
And this will help prevent that from happening and just in general keep things safer. One org that I would definitely recommend looking at is the Clean Air Club in Chicago. Mm-hmm. In general, the Chicago music and art scene has really been pushing this heavily. And it's been really inspiring and it makes me, you know, have a lot of faith that accessibility in these types of spaces will get even better the more that we, you know, get loud and work together on it. So yeah, I'll link a map to different clean air orgs in the show notes if you are interested in renting a purifier for free for events that you're throwing, or maybe you can tell different venues or promoters about it in your area.
I love that. I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's awesome, especially seeing people who like have lupus or long COVID and like that's already such a struggle to deal with. And then they're like, actually, let me turn this into making clean air, which is way more accessible for people who have more money, accessible for people who are lower income who may not be able to afford air purifiers themselves, and just people who don't think about it, and people who are like them who would just benefit greatly from having cleaner air. We all want clean air. Clean air
everywhere. Clean air everywhere.
For everyone. Yeah.
Okay, so guys, we're 3 for 3. We're 3 for 3 because I'm Sani this week too. I can't get enough of the Olympic trials. I can't get enough of excellence. I can't get enough of Sha'Carri Richardson. Like, yes. When the three members of her training team all made the Olympic team, I can't handle it. I am a pocket of goosebumps walking around. What Quincy Wilson, 16, qualifies for the 400 meter in the Olympics for fastest high school times ever. I mean,
crazy.
This is, I feel like the world, the news that we're consuming, everything we're surrounded by feels so dark and unhopeful. And to just see people, I know this sounds so corny, but like when I was growing up, I was on swim team. I held the record for 12 and under, 50 meter butterfly for a week.
Let's go.
Yes.
Okay, record holder.
And, okay.
Award winning swimmer, Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Just saying.
Period.
And I watch people and I am just screaming. And so I feel like we all need this. I am so excited. As we are recording, the gymnastics trials have started. Mm, so give me all the Simone. I can't wait. So, you guys, let's close out Pride Month with all the joy. And I am so grateful to the both of you for joining me. Fee, your research was excellent. I feel like we have given people a lot of tools to be better, more helpful members of society and allies. So thank you, Fee, for joining. Trey Bell, thank you so much for co-hosting this week's episode. We're
thank
off
you.
Next week for 4th of July. We'll be back on the 11th. Have a wonderful holiday.
Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians, and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
doesn't
stupid.
Doesn't sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.